Good afternoon, and welcome to the Health Information Exchange Onboarding Program Informational Webinar. All of our presenters today are from the Office of Health IT under the Oregon Health Authority. I'm Francie Neville, and I'm a policy analyst. You'll also be hearing from Susan Otter, our Director of Health IT, and Kristen Bork, a lead policy analyst. So our agenda today, we're planning to meet from 1 to 3 p.m. We'll start with an introduction to the webinar, our objectives, and some notes about the procurement. We'll move on to talking about the HIE landscape, challenges, and this opportunity. We'll give you a brief overview of the HIE onboarding program background, and then we'll dig into HIE onboarding program details, including the program summary, the budget, HIE criteria, priority providers, community-centered onboarding, connection types, payments to HIEs, and provider-side costs, and then monitoring, reporting, and meetings for HIEs. At the end, we will have time to hear your input, and then we'll wrap up with next steps. A few logistics about questions during the webinar. First of all, it will help us when you communicate with us if you let us know if your item is a question and you'd like a response, or if it's input that you just want to make sure we know. During the presentation, use the chat function to get in touch with us, and if it's a brief clarifying question, we'll address it right away. If it's a more detailed question, or if it's input only, feel free to ask when you think of it, or you can hold it to the end, and then we'll address questions, the more detailed questions at the input section. Just a note that we expect to have a very large group today, and we may not get to all the questions, but we will post questions and responses to questions on our website. During the program details section, there will be 3 5-minute question opportunities. Again, you can use the chat function to ask us questions, and we'll answer as many questions as we can, or respond to as many questions as we can, in 5 minutes, and then we'll move on. During the input section, we'll be gathering input from you. Once again, you can use the chat function to ask questions or to provide input. And again, it will help us if you can let us know if your item is a question or input. A couple of disclaimers. One of the purposes of this webinar is to explain some of the requirements and needs for the upcoming request for proposals. We also anticipate obtaining additional information and answering general questions prospective proposers may have. Statements made at the webinar are not binding upon OHA, the Oregon Health Authority. Prospective proposers are cautioned that the official RFP, when released, may vary, and after release will change only by written addenda issued by OHA. Also, this session is being recorded and will be posted on our website, and then, as I mentioned, questions and answers will be transcribed and posted on our website. An update about procurement. As I mentioned, we're currently drafting a request for proposals, and we're gathering feedback from a wide variety of sources, including this webinar. We'll consider your feedback as we revise the RFP. And June 9th is the last opportunity for feedback before the RFP goes to CMS, that's the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, for review and approval. We'll provide you details later in the presentation about how to submit feedback. And CMS is likely to take about 60 days for approval, although it could be shorter or longer. We anticipate releasing the RFP in the summer of 2017, and we want to hear all of your feedback during this presentation, but we want to let you know that we may not be able to answer all of your questions due to procurement restrictions. Once again, at the end of the presentation, we anticipate having 30 to 45 minutes to gather your input. You can submit additional input in writing through June 9th, instructions to follow. And a quick preview so you can keep in mind as you listen, we'll be asking your feedback around what your thoughts are on the program, whether there's anything in the program design that could impact feasibility of the program, any major concerns that you have, what sounds like it will work well, and anything else that you'd like to share. And last of all, here's a quick overview of our current program schedule. You'll be hearing later about the first three items, some of the background of how the program was developed. We're hoping that we'll be able to post the RFP in September of 2017, that we will announce recipients in the fall of 2017, launch in winter of 2017, and have onboarding underway in summer of 2018. And I'll turn it over to Susan Otter.
Great. Thanks, Francie. Hi, this is Susan Otter. I'm the Director of Health Information Technology for the Oregon Health Authority. And I'm excited to be presenting to you today on health information exchange and the opportunity with the HIE onboarding program. So, in general, the goals that we have to support health reform and health system transformation in Oregon for our health information technology efforts are on this slide. The first goal is to ensure that providers have the right information at the point of care to deliver whole person care and to coordinate across care teams. So that goal is a big focus for most of the work that we do, really making sure that information can be exchanged or accessed by different members of the care team, and that care coordination and decisions while delivering care are informed by information across different data sources. Our second goal for Health IT Optimized Healthcare is to ensure that data is available for system improvement so that systems such as health systems, CCOs, health plans, and providers can collect and use aggregated data for quality improvement, population management, and new payment models, so incentivizing health and prevention. And we see an increased role for the use of clinical data and clinical outcomes data and metrics in supporting population management and alternative payment models. So that's our second goal. In turn, policymakers, us at the state and others, need to have aggregated data and metrics to look at how effective we are in our health reform efforts and to inform policy development. And then our third goal is that Oregonians and their family, individuals and their families, can access and engage with their own health information and use it as a tool to improve their health and engage with their providers. So those three goals really underscore all that we do in the Office of Health IT and through our work with our Health IT Oversight Council, our HITOC. So to reiterate, our first goal around having access to meaningful, timely, relevant, and actionable patient information at the provider level is really a focus for many, if not most, of our efforts here at the state, and is really critical to ensuring that we can support the goals of healthcare transformation. In order to ensure that providers have the right information at the point of care, you know, electronic health record adoption is a foundational component of that. We've seen pretty stellar electronic health record adoption rates in Oregon in the physical health sphere. So all of our Oregon hospitals are on certified electronic health record technology, and we have more than 70% of physicians with electronic health records as well. We also are serving nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and others when we look at the Medicaid or Medicare meaningful use incentive payment programs where we look at our rates. However, rates are much lower in electronic health record adoption for our non-physical health care providers, particularly behavioral health, in some cases oral health, long-term services and supports, and many other critical providers that support our Medicaid population. Those populations and some, or those providers in many cases, have not been able to access the electronic health record incentive programs and in terms of meaningful use incentive payments, and in some cases have other barriers to electronic health record adoption. So once we are looking at a world with electronic health records for many, and although for some not an electronic health record, we're looking at health information exchange to make that information, patient-level information available to the care team. Next slide. So we have a plethora of health information exchange activities happening in Oregon and nationally. I wanted to highlight a few of these to kind of paint the picture of the environment within which we're looking at this health information exchange onboarding program opportunity. So on the left side of this slide, we've identified state-supported efforts that support health information exchange, and on the right side, other health information exchange happening within the environment. So at the state, we've pursued a strategy around direct secure messaging as a baseline for pushing health information from a known party to another known party. So as electronic health records within hospital systems and provider offices need to meet increased certification requirements and providers need to meet meaningful use requirements, direct secure messaging of transition of care summaries in particular has increased. We support web portal-based direct secure messaging for any provider in Oregon through our Care Accord program and are seeing some of our providers that don't have electronic health records using services like Care Accord in order to engage in that simple push exchange. We've also supported the Emergency Department Information Exchange, or EDI, and pre-manage, and that has really spread across the state in some pretty exciting ways. All Oregon hospitals are participating in EDI with the exception of the Veterans Administration, and we're working on them. and then pre-manage is the tool that looks into the EDI data and accesses real-time hospital event data for both emergency department and inpatient hospital events. Pre-manage is available for the care team outside of the emergency departments, and we have nearly all of our CCOs either using pre-manage or launching it, in the process of launching it, and as well as a number of commercial health plans, and then those plans and CCOs are rolling out pre-manage to their key practices. So we have over 200 practices at the primary care, behavioral health, oral health levels that are using pre-manage to manage hospital event hospital events and follow-up to that and care coordination around those critical transitions. We also have our public health division has some of the most advanced health information exchange with our immunization registry, which is set up in many cases as a bidirectional information exchange with pediatric and other offices. And we're working with our prescription drug monitoring program in public health that includes the controlled substance prescription fill data to make that web portal tool available electronically. So those are some really critical pieces of information that we house at the state that are useful for the care team. We're also supporting the directories to help with health information exchange. We currently have a flat file directory that contains almost 11,000 direct secure messaging addresses to support finding who to send that direct secure message to in Oregon. So we're excited to sponsor the flat file directory in Oregon. We have a lot of folks participating in that. And then we have in development our statewide provider directory that will support health information exchange and care coordination with a single source of reliable information about providers, where they're practicing, and how to reach them for electronic health information exchange and identify other characteristics related to providers. That effort is set to launch in 2018. And then lastly, our clinical quality metrics registry will be launching as well in 2018, and that will be a streamlined, efficient way to collect the clinical quality metrics data from providers or their health information exchange or data intermediary or CCO or payer in some cases to collect those data and make them available for the Medicaid EHR incentive program, our CCO incentive metrics, and we hope to be useful for other pay-for-performance type programs. In terms of other health information exchange, I think it's important just to recognize that there's a plethora of health information exchange happening outside of these state-supported efforts. We have some regional health information exchanges that have developed by within communities in Oregon. In many cases, CCOs or hospitals and other groups that are supporting those regional health information exchanges, and they're gaining traction in their communities. There are vendor-driven solutions and national networks as well as federal initiatives at the national level where we have the Sequoia Project providing e-health exchange to connect health systems and other organizations to federal agencies and to each other. And then Commonwell and Care Equality as national health information exchange networks that vendors are implementing and their users can choose to switch on or participate in at their choice. There's some really exciting opportunities with those efforts, given the landscape we have in Oregon with predominant electronic health records, including Epic and others that are participating in making those tools available to their users. And then lastly, we have private efforts by CCOs, health plans, health systems, independent physician associations, and others that serve to support sharing information across care teams, including hosted electronic health records and others. So there's a lot happening in health information exchange in Oregon, and hopefully that gave you a bit of a sense of the plethora of efforts happening. However, there are many gaps in health information exchange that really impact our ability to deliver on health system transformation, and particularly some of our goals within Medicaid. So despite the extensive health information exchange opportunities that are out there, we have many geographical areas in Oregon where there isn't, say, a regional health information exchange or other obvious solution for providers to participate in. We see that our providers are not all the same in terms of their needs for health information exchange. We had the pleasure of participating in the Rural Facility Listening Tour last year and heard from some of our rural frontier providers that while they do share information or need to locally in their communities, they're often sending their patients for urgent and specialty care and acute care to the Portland metro area or across state lines, and really for meaningful health information exchange, they need to be able to connect much more broadly than their communities. We also have provider types, different provider types that face gaps. As I mentioned, our behavioral health providers, long-term services and supports, and others may lack an electronic health record or have health information exchange needs that are more complex or less served by exchanging a continuity of care document, for example. So as we think about the use cases that our providers face, we see that there are plenty of gaps by provider type. And then there are providers that are using electronic health records or lack an electronic health record and are unable to participate in some broader vendor-driven or single EHR solutions, system solutions. So there's barriers there. And then we also understand that for organizations to change their workflows to exchange information with their major trading partners is the kind of jargon term that we're using. To actually let go of that fax machine, it's really important to have a critical mass of trading partners participating in a health information exchange effort. And then lastly, providers in many cases face barriers that are financial, particularly our smaller providers or even our behavioral health providers that have much smaller margins when compared to their physical health provider peers. And so financial components may be a barrier for providers who want to connect with a health information exchange effort and need to fund their electronic health record vendor costs, for example. In many cases, the financial benefits of participating in health information exchange and care coordination accrue to the payers as well. And so we look at ways to help offset provider costs. Okay, so hopefully that paints a bit of a picture of the health information exchange landscape in Oregon and the gaps that we're looking to fill with the various strategies that we have. One of the most exciting things that's happened for us with health information exchange is a new opportunity to leverage 90% federal matching funds to support the costs of onboarding priority Medicaid providers to community-based health information exchanges. We're looking at community-based health information exchanges that can provide meaningful health information exchange opportunities and that already are playing a vital role for Medicaid in their communities. Next slide. Community-based health information exchanges offer a number of values. One is they provide services regardless of ownership affiliation. So, for example, we have certainly health systems or hospital systems that provide health information exchange technologies to their owned clinics or affiliated clinics. And community-based health information exchanges are agnostic to that ownership affiliation. Community-based health information exchanges provide services regardless of electronic health record product or even to those that lack an electronic health record. So unlike some of the exciting opportunities that include vendor implementations like care quality, or the community-based health information exchanges are agnostic as to which electronic health record a participant has. And also, health information exchanges that are community-based can help providers manage transitions of care and care coordination across providers in different health systems with a variety of electronic health records. I want to just mention one quick thing here, which is in our HITOC meeting last week, we identified four high-priority use cases for health information exchange in our strategies. And I'll just mention them real briefly. One is e-referrals or closed-loop referrals. Another is complex care coordination. The third is event alerting or notifications. And the fourth is providing data through exchange of health information to support alternative payment models. We see many of our health information exchange opportunities in Oregon as serving different components of those use cases. Community-based health information exchanges are really well suited to support many of those, and particularly complex care coordination and providing being one place to support data for alternative payment models. Next slide. So in terms of Oregon's health information exchange onboarding program, I think we'll transition here to describing the background and then the opportunity in this program for Oregon. When we looked at the particular environment and gaps we have in Oregon and the role we want this new federal funding to play for Medicaid, we are expecting that our program will require health information exchanges to provide some meaningful support for provider-side costs. That could be in-kind support or other support as well, and we'll talk a little bit more about that or mention that again as we go. We'll require health information exchanges to coordinate their efforts with their critical Medicaid partners in the communities that they operate. We'll use this to incentivize the geographical spread of community-based health information exchange in Oregon and try and see what we can do to fill some of the geographical gaps. And we are prioritizing specific high-priority Medicaid provider types. A first phase will prioritize behavioral health providers, oral health, critical physical health, and major trading partners to ensure that there is value for all communities. And then we'll add other Medicaid priority provider types in later phases. So that's just a preview of what we're going to talk about next. Next slide. Lastly, I wanted to mention that the HIE onboarding program and our support for community-based health information exchanges is one strategy among many. As I mentioned, community-based HIEs have many opportunities to fill the gaps that we identified, And work is underway with other strategies to complement this in terms of HITOX statewide HIT and HIE strategy update, which we're finishing up with HITOX, the initiative to develop a public-private governance effort, which we're calling the Health IT Commons, to help govern and support the health information technology policies and programs and potentially services to support health information technology objectives. And lastly, a network of networks, including connecting to health information exchange enabling infrastructure, such as our provider directory and other statewide services, connecting between health information exchanges and other nodes in the network, and connecting to state data sources, as I mentioned, like the prescription drug monitoring program, for example. So as we're developing further the concept of network of networks and a governance effort and updating our strategies, community-based HIEs play a significant role in those strategies as well. In the future, the health information exchange entities that we contract with through this request for proposals may also have some support to connect to the planned network of networks. So that is one component that is included in our RFP. Next. All right, Kristen.
Okay. Hi, I'm Kristen Bork, and I'm a lead policy analyst working on the HIE onboarding program, and I'm going to discuss a bit about the background of the program and how we developed it. In February of 2016, CMS released a state Medicaid director's letter that broadened the range of Medicaid providers who are eligible for onboarding support from the HITOX 90% federal funding match so that these Medicaid providers could be onboarded to an HIE entity or interoperable system. Onboarding includes legal activities, including the establishment of user agreements, interfaces, technical development activities, configuration, testing, workflow integration, training, and post-onboarding support of additional education and training for less than 1 year after the initial onboarding. The providers that are now included under this expansion are both Medicaid providers who are eligible for Medicaid EHR incentive program. This includes physicians, dentists, nurse practitioners, physicians' assistants in certain settings, and under physicians, pediatric optometrists and naturopaths are now included in Oregon. The other providers, the other Medicaid providers they need to communicate with to meet meaningful use are also included, such as behavioral health providers, including substance use treatment, long-term services and supports, home health, corrections health, laboratory, pharmacy, emergency medical services, and public health providers. In order to develop the program, we spoke with a variety of stakeholder groups and other organizations. Starting in October and ending in December of 2016, we convened a short-term advisory group to provide input. We also met with a wide array of stakeholders, the statewide oversight and health-related groups, and with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. We released a request for information that gathered input from entities operating an active HIE in Oregon. We also looked at similar programs that are running in eight other states. And we had an open invitation for all CCOs, the coordinated care organizations, to come and listen at an HIT advisory group. So this is just a list of the different stakeholders that we've engaged throughout the process. We intend to continue to engage with stakeholders through the implementation of the contract as well. As I mentioned, we conducted research on what other states had done. This program is under an expansion, and these are eight states that have been running onboarding programs previous to the expansion. So the eight states that we spoke with that currently have HITOX-funded onboarding programs are Alaska, Arizona, Colorado, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. We had interviews with each of the states, And what we learned was that there is a lot of variation overall, but there were some common themes. And those common themes included that the connection of major trading partners early in the program helped to ensure some success, that most of these programs are now prioritizing behavioral health, that there is a large variability in funding actual costs of onboarding versus incentives, that long-term care is important but has been challenging technically, that health information exchanges must be skilled at communicating the value of HIE to providers, and that everyone should expect this to take more time and effort than predicted. So as I mentioned, we spoke with a large variety of stakeholder groups, including the states, organizations, et cetera, and our broad themes that we learned were that there's a wide range of technological and HIE readiness in Oregon, and that there are differing needs in urban, rural, and frontier areas. We have a need in the state to share information statewide and also across state lines, and that there is a need for a critical mass of trading partners to ensure the value for participants. There's a tension between the need to connect major trading partners to create this value, but also a need to ensure that behavioral health, oral health, smaller providers, and others are included. We need to have tools that fit into workflow and provide high value for participants with the right information at the right time. And as mentioned earlier, providers need help with HIT and HIE costs. Okay, and now we're going to move into the description of the program, and Francie is going to start.
All right, so as Susan explained, the program will support the costs of connecting priority Medicaid providers, we'll get to a definition of that shortly, to a community-based HIE that provides meaningful HIE opportunities and that plays a vital role for Medicaid in a community. Before we get into the details, the next two slides are a quick overview of what the program will and won't do. So what the program will do is support community-based HIEs. So those that at a minimum provide core HIE services, meaning a community health record, plus referrals and or results delivery, that are open to priority Medicaid providers, again, we'll define that shortly, regardless of the ownership affiliation or the EHR used. The program will support HIE side costs for onboarding priority Medicaid providers, will require HIEs to make a meaningful financial contribution to provider-side costs, which might be in-kind or otherwise. It will support a variety of Medicaid provider types in a phased approach. It will leverage existing infrastructure, and it will support a network of networks. What the program won't do, first, support entities that are not community-based HIEs. So it won't support HIEs that don't provide those core services described on the prior slide. It won't support HIEs that require a particular ownership affiliation in order to qualify for participation. And it won't support EHR-based solutions that require providers to use a single EHR vendor in order to participate in exchange. It also won't provide funding directly to providers, clinics, hospitals, or health systems. It won't establish a state-run HIE or establish new HIEs, and it won't support the ongoing costs of HIE entities after onboarding is complete, support operational costs, or purchase EHRs. In terms of the budget, again, we are leveraging 90% federal funding with a 10% state match. The high-tech funds are available through 2021, and the actual funding will vary based on state and federal budgets. Our federal funding for the next biennium for this program was approved in May 2017, and the initial state match for the next biennium, 2017 to 2019, is already allocated. If more than one contract is awarded, awards to each entity may vary based on capacity and the work to be done. In terms of the HIE criteria, again, it must be a community-based HIE with those core services of community health records plus referrals and or results delivery, open to new priority Medicaid provider participants, regardless of their ownership affiliation, not require participants to use a particular EHR and not a single EHR-based solution. And key criteria for the HIEs will include being established and sustainable, having strong Oregon relationships and footprint, and having robust privacy and security practices. We're going to have our first five-minute question opportunity, and this is especially for clarification questions, ideally. And once again, you'll use the chat function to ask your question.
So this is Susan. We've got a couple questions that have come in so far, so I think we'll start with those. So the first question is, who will be responsible for the oversight of the Health Information Exchange as it relates to privacy, security, and regulatory or statutory compliance? So at a high level, we are looking at our qualifications for Health Information Exchange entities in terms of their privacy and security practices, and we'll be addressing those, our oversight of those through the contract. So I think that's probably all I'll say at this time. But in terms of the Health Information Exchange onboarding program and our funding there, we want to ensure, of course, that privacy and security and regulatory and statutory compliance are in effect so that the Health Information Exchange is trusted and reliable. The second question is, what advantages are seen in putting energy into regional HIEs instead of focusing solely on the National Health Information Exchange care equality? So there's a couple thoughts I wanted to mention in terms on this question. One is the national care equality effort is a really exciting opportunity, and we have a number of Oregon entities participating. The electronic health record vendors that are implementing care equality are many of the large vendors that have a footprint in Oregon, and even one of the larger behavioral health electronic health record vendors is now an implementer for care equality. Having an electronic health record that's an implementer is a prerequisite for participating in care equality, and so we have significant gaps in terms of the providers in Oregon that are not using one of those electronic health records and their ability to participate. So while we are very excited about the opportunities with an effort like Care Equality and want to do our part to promote those, given the footprint that they have and the value that they have, we see the investment in community-based health information exchanges as complementary. And that really serve to fill gaps in a way that the national effort does not. The other thing I'll mention is Care Equality has a current implementation, aligned implementation around query-based document exchange, particularly the CCD exchange for continuity of care documents. And that is a incredible use, incredible value in that particular implementation. However, it doesn't address all of the high-priority use cases that we have to serve complex care coordination and other things. So I just want to say it's a complex environment, and those efforts play an important role. Let's see, some comments here. Just one more minute. When you are talking about priority Medicaid providers, are those determined by type of provider, i.e. primary care behavioral health, or specialist considered priority? So I think we're getting to that next, actually. So I'm sorry, I will hold that question next. And then question, will this effort be tied to ONC's interoperability efforts on the national level? Yes, all of our work is in alignment with ONC's interoperability networks or interoperability efforts. In one example, As we think about ONC's focus on data blocking and ensuring that we don't have organizations and technology vendors engaged in practices that lead to data blocking, we see the network of networks strategy that we have as being a critical one in addressing data blocking practices. So I think the Health Information Exchange onboarding program supporting community-based HIEs is directly in alignment with the intentions of ONC as well. And they are promoting all states as a CMS in maximizing the use of this 90% federal match for these purposes. So I'm going to stop there. We have a couple more questions that have come in, and we'll pick them up in the next question period.
Okay, great. So Francie just went over some of the HIE criteria, and now we're going to discuss the priority providers for phase one and then later for the later phases. So the provider type for priority providers, the provider type, the first one we have listed is behavioral health, and the specific providers that we're looking at under behavioral health are community mental health programs, certified community behavioral health centers, behavioral health homes, assertive community treatment teams, and mobile crisis teams. And the next provider type, and just to mention, all of these provider types are Medicaid provider types. So the next provider type is oral health, and the specific providers under this would be those clinics that are contracted with Medicaid dental care organizations serving CCO members and the fee-for-service population. The next priority provider type on the list are those critical physical health providers, and these are Medicaid providers who participate in patient-centered primary care homes, federally qualified health centers, rural health clinics, and comprehensive primary care plus, as well as tribal health, equity-focused clinics, and county corrections health. And finally on the list are, as a provider type, are those major trading partners in behavioral, oral, and critical physical health. And for purposes of the HIE onboarding program, major trading partners include hospitals, health systems, and other large organizations that priority Medicaid providers need to communicate with and that create value for priority Medicaid providers. So as I mentioned, those were the priority providers for the first phase. In later phases, we are likely to include priority providers such as long-term services and supports, social services, supported housing, and other organizations whose work focuses on the social determinants of health. And provider types from earlier phases, from phase one, may be included in later phases. So as we've discussed the HIE criteria and the priority providers, now we're going to look at community-centered onboarding approach. So as we're looking at a community-centered onboarding approach, local Medicaid providers, such as the CCOs, will have the opportunity to consult on the HIE's annual work plans for the program, particularly on those aspects that are impacting their communities. The Oregon Health Authority must approve the HIE's annual work plans for the program, and only priority Medicaid providers will be included in the work plans. We want to ensure that the program is serving the right local clinics and hospitals and that they are connected at the right time. Early onboarding of major trading partners will help to ensure the value of onboarding, particularly for providers in rural and frontier areas, and those with state and interstate trading partners. And so now we have another 5-minute clarification and question opportunity, if anyone has any questions or clarification needed.
Okay, great. This is Susan again. Just a couple questions have come in. Please feel free to use your chat function to send us any questions if you're have thoughts or questions about any of the priority provider types, et cetera. So let me go back to we have, looks like, 3 or 4 questions in here. So going back to, are specialists considered a priority provider type? So when we look at our priority provider types, we are looking at behavioral health, oral health, and priority physical health providers, and then major trading partners. And so when we think about who might fall into major trading partners, we're really interested to understand to what extent specialists or hospital systems or other entities play a foundational role in adding value as trading partners into a health information exchange. So that's an area where we'd love input in the RFP responses and in this as a part of this webinar. So think about that. Let us know your thoughts about our priority provider types. The next question, if community health information exchanges are required to provide support, financial and in-kind, who will pay the tab, not just up front, but on an ongoing basis? One of the problems many health information exchanges have faced nationally is with sustainability. This is a great point, and we're very concerned about sustainability as we look at making significant investments in onboarding to our community-based health information exchanges through this program. So as part of that, we are looking at health information exchanges that have sustainability plans in place, recognizing that the funding that we're providing is for onboarding costs. We want to ensure that we're onboarding folks onto something that's sustainable, ongoing. So we'll be asking for an understanding of sustainability as part of the request for proposals. And there's a number of models that different health information exchanges locally and nationally use for those. I wanted to clarify on this one, financial support or in-kind support, it does not need to be both. We're really looking at reducing the financial barrier that a provider might face, for example, in paying a fee to a health information exchange or covering their costs otherwise. So we're really interested in feedback about this requirement that we're including in our RFP. So our thought with that is we're bringing the Medicaid 90-10 funding side of the house to the health information exchanges onboarding costs, and we'd like to understand how the health information exchange or their governance entities, our funders, are supporting the provider side costs in some way. Next question, do we know how much funding is likely to be available in Oregon? Can we mention the initial state match for the current and next biennium? We will include a not to exceed when the RFP comes out. We're not prepared to mention that today. We are on pins and needles for some of the state budget discussions. We've identified our initial state match that we've identified out of our base budget. So we have that set aside and would be interested in any additional match we're able to garner out of the state budget process. And so we don't have a final answer on that yet. But also that we'll have a sense of that when the RFP comes out. One other comment related to the discussion around care equality. That care equality does not support the need for community database and the need for referrals. So just reemphasizing that the community-based health information exchanges, we feel like support gaps and priority use cases in a way that is a really excellent place for us to support investing in health information exchange onboarding and those resources. The next question, how does housing play into this? Great question. So one of the things that I want to make sure to mention is that as we think about health information exchange and care coordination, particularly within our Medicaid priorities, we're focused on connecting physical, behavioral, and oral health, as well as long-term services and supports, and moving into other types of entities that support social needs, including supported housing. Even corrections, corrections health, but also corrections as a social component. So we're definitely looking at how our health information exchange onboarding program can support those social service type providers as priority providers in subsequent phases. Our thinking is that our phase one priorities around behavioral, oral, and physical health providers and major trading partners build value within the health information exchanges to get to that tipping point while we explore the opportunities within the social service area. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on that as well. And then last question that I'll take now, and then we'll bump the rest to the next section. Is there a federal requirement that dictates what is part of the initial versus future phase, or is that OHA determined? Great question. So the requirements for the federal 90% funding are very broad. And so it's OHA that has identified our priority provider types in these phases. And so that's something that we'd love your input on. So we are able to use 90-10 funding to support any Medicaid provider connecting to a health information exchange or interoperable system where that system supports a provider that's eligible for the incentive program for meaningful use and meeting their meaningful use objectives. So there is some pretty broad language in terms of this includes long-term services and supports, corrections, social services, behavioral health, and others, as well as physical health providers in the federal state Medicaid director's letter. So I'll stop, pause there with questions, and go to the next section.
Great. So, again, this is Francie Neville. Kristen started speaking about community-centered onboarding as it relates to work plans. And the other facet of the community-centered onboarding approach is regions. So the program will support one HIE per region, and we'll explain in just a moment what those regions are. And there are also a few exceptions to that, which I'll talk about in the next slide. So in order to get support for onboarding in a region, an HIE that's contracted under the program would need to show, one, a relationship with the CCO in terms of data, funding, or governance, and I'm also going to address multiple CCO region issues in a later slide. And two, that the CCO supports the HIE onboarding in that region under this program, and the CCO would provide that support in writing. And so the HIE would submit proof the first time that it asks for approval for onboarding in that region in its work plan that those two conditions are met. So a few exceptions to that regional approach. So first, tribal clinics can choose to onboard to the contracted HIE of their choice. Second, OHA may support onboarding by a contracted HIE that serves a narrow range of providers if it's connected to an HIE that serves a broad range of providers within the same region, and clinics would decide which HIE to join. And then OHA does retain the right to adjust to ensure the success of the program. So let's summarize what I just said and also talk about the potential region with multiple CCOs. So I'm going to start at the top left square of the chart. So in a situation where there is one HIE and one region, and a region with one CCO, first of all, the CCO must agree that the HIE would onboard under the program in that region, and then the CCO must have a relationship with that HIE in terms of data, funding, or governance. Again, I'm going to move to the right top row. So a region with one CCO and there are multiple contracted HIEs in that region. So first, the CCO needs to choose a single HIE for onboarding under this program and then again have a relationship with that HIE in terms of data, funding, or governance. And moving to the bottom row, when we have a region with multiple CCOs, ideally, all CCOs agree on a single HIE, and all CCOs have a relationship with that HIE in terms of data, funding, or governance. If the CCOs disagree or those conditions aren't met, OHA would determine if onboarding should be supported in that region and which HIE should receive support. And OHA is less likely to support onboarding for regions in which CCOs don't agree on whether or how onboarding should take place. And once again, those exceptions that I mentioned on the prior slide still enforce. And then last, here's our chart for the regions for the HIE onboarding program. There are 12 regions. I won't read all of them off to you, but that's there. And the chart is also available in the handout that you can download if you want to have that to refer back to.
So this, can I just mention, this is Susan, I just mentioned on this so you can see most of the regions we've identified for this program have a single CCO in them, but we have, what is it, 5 regions that have multiple CCOs. So just to keep that in mind as you're thinking about the structure that we're proposing for the HIE program and onboarding program and the CCO involvement. So we'd love your thoughts about this piece in particular as we're designing this. And don't forget to type in any comments or questions you have as we go, or make sure to jot down your notes and we'll talk about this more. Thanks.
Absolutely. And that brings us to our third 5-minute question opportunity. Perfect timing. So please, if you haven't already typed a question into the chat or question box, go ahead and do that, and we're going to take questions for 5 minutes now.
All right, so this is Susan. Looks like we don't have any new questions. We have a few comments. Okay, here's a let's see. Yep, so we have some comments, but no questions. Here's a comment. Some providers participate in multiple CCOs. So the interoperability of health information exchanges is critical to be of use for these providers. I think that's a great point, and something that we didn't go very deeply into the concept of network of networks earlier, but we do anticipate as we look at how do we make sure health information is available across the state, regardless of what health information exchange provider is participating. We're looking at how do we connect between health information exchanges, for example. So that's something that we're including in our network of networks sort of strategy, and will be a component of our contracting and support for any health information exchanges that meet our criteria through this program. Other comments or questions? Here's a question or comment. Are there multiple health information exchanges? And yes, there is more than one. Any other questions that folks want to have? Or we'll close this and we'll save your comments and questions for the end input section. Okay, great.
Okay, so this is Kristen, and as we've gone over the criteria and the providers, the community-centered approach, and had a brief discussion on the regions, now we're going to go into the connection types. And so clinics, hospitals can connect to the HIE either through the HIE's portal or through EHR integration. So there will be two types of connections that will be possible under this program. The HIEs will be able to receive support for upgrading priority Medicaid providers from portals to EHR integration connections if that happens during the life of the project. Clinics can use their own EHRs. No particular EHR will be required. And if clinics do not have an EHR, they can access this through portal access. And so another component of this will be the payments to the HIEs. And so the HIEs will receive milestone-based flat payments for each entity that is onboarded. There will be three milestones spread across the onboarding process. The first will be the signed agreement with the entity. The next will be when the connection goes live. And the last milestone will be the post-connection support for less than 1 year, so for less than 365 days. And that will start from the time of the signed agreement. The milestone payments are intended to be a proxy for the average connection cost, but will not equal the actual connection cost. Payments for portal access will be lower than those for EHR integration. And payments will likely be higher for those entities with a large number of different connections that are required, such as hospitals or large clinics that have labs, et cetera, in-house. And the specific milestone amounts will be determined during negotiations. And then, as we've discussed a few times during the presentation, provider side costs. OHA is aware that provider side costs for onboarding can be a barrier. And so under the program, we will require HIEs to provide meaningful financial support for provider side costs. And as we've discussed, that could either be through reducing or not charging subscription fees, supporting providers' vendor costs, in-kind, et cetera. Another component of the program will be the monitoring, reporting, and meetings. Onboarding of providers will be based on annual work plans that are approved by OHA. These will be able to be discussed and revised during the implementation to recognize the dynamic environment. HIEs will need to provide reports both quarterly and annually, and also at the end of the program to show the progress toward targets and to show how the program is moving forward. In some cases, additional data may be required outside of the reporting periods. HIEs will be expected to participate in a program evaluation for the overall program. HIEs will also be expected to participate in regular meetings with OHA to discuss the progress in the program, any potential issues or concerns, and to generally keep everyone aware of how things are going. And HIEs may also be expected to present or to participate in HIE work groups that are statewide, in committees, and in governance as needed. Okay. And so, keeping in mind all of this information that we have just given you throughout the previous presentation, we'd like to go to the section where we get your input. So to just reiterate, so the opportunity that we have in front of us right now with the HIE onboarding program is to leverage a 90% federal matching funds to support the cost of onboarding priority Medicaid providers to community-based HIEs that offer meaningful HIE opportunities and play a vital role for Medicaid in communities. So keeping this opportunity in mind and the components that we have discussed, we would like your feedback on what are your thoughts on the program. Is there anything in the program design that you think impacts the feasibility of the program as we've described it? What are your major concerns around the program design? What sounds like it will work well? And what else would you like to share? So this is your opportunity to enter your questions and comments and input into chat, and we can discuss that. This will not be your only opportunity. If after the webinar you were thinking and you decide you want to send in further input, that can be sent to me, Kristen Borg, by June 9th.
All right. So we had a couple more items come in through the chat. A question. Could funding be applied to an HIE to HIE onboarding effort? Great question. So as we think about, so yes, the answer is that the 90-10 federal match is available to support onboarding in a couple of different ways, bringing Medicaid providers onto health information exchanges is the way that we're really focused on. But it also allows us to support onboarding of data sources or other connections to support interoperable health information exchange to support our concept of a network of networks. And so as we think about the funding opportunity and this specific request for proposals, we're focused out of the gate on the onboarding of Medicaid providers. But we're holding in reserve the ability to support health information exchange entities that qualify and that receive contracts under this RFP in onboarding to our network of networks components, which the vision for that is to support cross-state health information exchange across the state, across regions, across health information exchanges. So, yes, some of the funding could be used for that. And I think one of the things that we are thinking about is the maximum value for this investment. So out of the gate, we know that there's a real need to bring on our priority types of Medicaid providers to health information exchanges. And so we're looking at specific limited pot of funding, and the extent to which we want to support Medicaid provider onboarding is our first priority, but looking at network of networks support as well as opportunities for the future. Okay, so that was one question. Let's see. In terms of feedback, by June 9th, we'll have an email address for Kristen Bork that's included in the slides that we'll show next. And so that's the address to send your additional feedback to. And we really encourage you to jot down your thoughts, formal or informal, and we'd love to hear them as we finalize the request for proposals. Okay, so a couple of other questions have come in. Great. So what will the HIE selection process look like? Will clinics be given a list that they can select from? A great question, and I think one that we will be looking at input from you all. We'll certainly be, if we have multiple health information exchange entities that are contracted through this RFP, we'll be looking at supporting one community-based health information exchange per region, with the exception of potentially specialty-based health information exchanges, as we mentioned earlier. So more to come on that, but there's definitely been interest in how do we help providers understand what's available to them under this program, and we're looking at how we want to communicate clearly about what community-based health information exchange is in all of the environment of health information exchange, what the benefits are and what the opportunities are, and how to access that. Next question. How confident are you that you will get qualified responses, specifically ones that have a sustainable financial model? We are hoping that potential responders are reviewing the webinar today and are letting us know if there are any concerns that they have about being able to meet the criteria that we've lined out. So we've certainly done some landscape analysis and assessed HIE onboarding programs in other states and the criteria that they've had. So we feel like we've tuned the program criteria as well as we can to achieve our goals, ensure accountability for the federal and state funding we'll be spending in this program, while really looking at communities to support health information exchange and for us to bring the onboarding funding to those communities. Hopefully that makes sense. Let's see. Some other comments. Let's see. Some counties have fairly different health networks compared to other communities. Is that common? So that's in response to the CCO regional map. So we'll take a look at that, where we have some counties that are grouped together. Let's see. Oh, here's a question. It seems that EHR vendors will likely be the most significant receivers of these funds. Are there some limits on the vendor per provider connection or any efforts underway to ensure that connection efforts occur at a fair price? There seems to be quite a bit of variation at times in these proposals. Okay, there's a lot in that question. Let me tease a couple things out. One is, so when we think about HIE onboarding, we're talking about a provider, let's say for this example, a community mental health program, connecting to a community-based health information exchange. If they have an electronic health record, that connection could be a technical connection, including interfaces, what have you, that their EHR vendor has to put into place with the health information exchange, and the health information exchange has to do their side. Our HIE onboarding program funding can support the HIE efforts or the HIE entity's costs and not the provider's electronic health record costs. So the EHR vendors will receive none of the funds from the federal 90% and state 10% match. Those funds will be to the health information exchange entity. However, your point, I believe, is that the electronic health record vendors, if we ramp up all the community mental health programs in Oregon and they're each one by one going to their same vendor and to the extent that they have the same vendor and paying to their vendor to onboard a health information exchange, that the EHR vendors will significantly benefit from this program. So, we would love to understand if there are opportunities with particular vendors to have a one-to-many connection, or many-to-one connection, I guess. We've also had a lot of feedback in many different areas of the work we do about providers' challenges in navigating their EHR vendors and have talked about different strategies to bring providers together that have the same EHR vendor and help them put pressure on that vendor to work collaboratively. So we don't have anything specific to point to other than this is an issue that's been brought up, and we would be very interested in any input or feedback that folks have to us on that and the role that we can play at the state, as well as the role that an HIE entity could play as a component of this program. What about interstate connections? Does someone from Idaho, for example, have to connect to all the various HIEs? Great question, and this is one that we're kind of bumping down the road a little bit, to be frank, around the network of networks conversation about how do we really ensure that health information exchange in Oregon is statewide and even into our neighboring states. We've gotten some great feedback along the way about making sure that we're not setting up Oregon network of networks, requirements that preclude cross-state exchange or make things more burdensome, particularly for organizations that do a lot of work across states. So we'd love more thoughts that you have on this, and we'll be diving into the network of networks strategy as we go forward. For this HIE onboarding program, we're really looking at supporting those community-based health information exchanges and the onboarding to them and the role that those community-based HIEs will play in the network of networks we think is significant. Okay, next question. Would oral health be a specialty health information exchange by definition? That is a good question, and I think I'm going to refer you to the definition, and we can potentially follow up in a separate Q&A. Next question, will there be a template available for filling out the RFP? So we're doing everything we can to ensure that our RFP, the burden for proposers is, you know, we're asking what we need to ask and not a lot of things that we'd love to know. And that to the extent that we can include tables or other things that we're considering that. So you'll see when the RFP comes out. If you think that there is particular templates or things that are best practices that you'd like to point us to, we'd love to see any of those examples. That would be very helpful. Again, you know, we're on a pretty tight timeline to get this off to CMS, so really looking for final feedback and input from the by June 9th. Let's see. Health information technology is the health IT, so I'm using a lot of acronyms. There's a question about that. And thinking about cross-state lines of health information exchange. So we're using this term network of networks to refer to our strategy that recognizes that we have many different networks of health information exchange happening and that we want to create kind of a rational way to connect it, to connect across these networks. So that's our overarching concept of a network of networks. And we'll have more information about what that means in our HITOC strategic plan and other communications going forward. Okay, question for further thought. When looking at interstate interoperability, need to have attention to different regulatory environments. So that's great. That's providing some resources that we can look at interstate data exchange. That's really helpful. A few people have mentioned that downloading the PDF from handout from the GoToMeeting webinar has been a little bit challenging. The materials are posted on the website. We've made just a couple of updates to the slides that you're seeing here, and we'll be reposting those and emailing them out to everyone who participated in today's webinar. Here's a question. If you're an HIE that is currently pursuing and connecting community partners, and if you were selected through the RFP process, will the funds be available for connections that are currently in process but have yet to be completed? Great question, and I'm not sure that we're going to answer that today, but that's something that will be clear in the RFP as that comes out. But we understand that that is definitely a situation that folks will have questions about. So appreciate you bringing that up. Okay. Let's see. I think I'm going to go back to the top and see if there are other comments that we didn't go through. We have a number of comments really around health information exchanges connecting and talking to each other. So that's a great flag for us that I think as we think about our concept of network of HIEs for health information exchange, that we want to be clear how this program connects, what our expectations are through this program as we build that. So I think I've talked about that a bit. The comment, when we talked about the use cases for health information exchange, one of the four high-priority use cases that HITOC identified, HITOC being our Health IT Oversight Council, is providing data to support alternative payment models. And so this comment is, if payers have access to health information exchange data, HIPAA requires a minimum necessary standard that needs to be adhered to, given that the exchange would be for payment and healthcare operations. So great point there. Let's see. I think we have gone through most of these. Here's another comment about the role that specialists play. Specialists provide services at hospitals to trauma patients and then follow patients in the clinic to continue care and organize other agency involvement in that care, such as home therapy, home health, sorry, therapy, and communicating with the primary care provider. Excellent. Thank you so much for that. And again, we'd love to hear folks' comments on our priority Medicaid providers table or other thoughts about the role that specialists play in let's see. So a couple comments about the importance of involving non-Medicaid or Medicare providers and plans. The more data in the health information exchange, the more effective the health information exchange will be. This includes supporting non-Medicaid beneficiaries who may later become Medicaid beneficiaries. If this is not taken into account, the full picture of the patient's needs will not be necessarily available. So this is great and a good reminder that our Medicaid beneficiaries really often come on and off of Medicaid and are served by providers outside of their CCO involvement or their Medicaid membership. I know the funding that we have, the 90-10 funding, is specific to Medicaid providers, but this comment, I think, really speaks to our intention, which is to support health information exchanges that provide a value in a community and that have, and we recognize that the having the majority of trading partners in participating through that health information exchange is really critical to providing value for our target providers. Even when the other providers in that health information exchange are not Medicaid providers per se, for example. Okay. Let's see. Some concerns to consider for the program: privacy, security, compliance, ongoing sustainability, interoperability, provider education, and sufficient participation to provide enough data to make the value, to make the HIE a value to participating providers. Nice summary. Thank you. And I think in terms of those concerns that we have, I think the what would be really helpful to us in addition to raising these, we'll go back and think through our RFP with the comments in mind. But any particular things you think we can do as we set up this program and bring this funding to Oregon to mitigate concerns around privacy and security, compliance, sustainability, interoperability, and provider education, and a tipping point of participation. So those are great points to bring up, and would love any additional advice or thoughts you have in terms of the way we set up this program and those, with those in mind. Okay. Let's see. All right. And then the question about the webinar. We are recording this webinar. And we'll be posting the recording to our website as along with the updated slide deck, and that we'll get that posted as quickly as we can. Any other comments or questions from folks? I think I've gone through all the ones that have been typed in so far. All right, we'll hold for another minute or two if folks are thinking about anything else they'd like to raise to us at this time. While you're thinking or perhaps typing, I'll just mention that we are thrilled with the level of participation in this webinar today. We've had 78 attendees in this webinar and over 90 folks that had RSVP'd, so or about 100. So we think there's a lot of interest in health information exchange and the state's efforts, given that level of participation, and we rely on all of you to give us great input in terms of your thoughts and on you know how we're setting up this program. All right, so seeing no further questions, let's go ahead to our final slide on next steps. Okay, Great. So, as I mentioned, we'll accept feedback prior to our submission of the RFP draft to CMS through June 9th. Please share any additional thoughts after today, any questions you have, any comments, any cautions for us by contacting Kristen Bork at her email address, kristen.m.bork@state.or.us, which is hopefully on your screen there. It is. Please stay updated at our website. As I mentioned, we'll be posting our materials there and continue to post things there as we go. And so our next steps, as we mentioned, because of the 90% federal match, we have to go through CMS approval before we're able to post the RFP. We're looking to get that off to CMS in the next couple of weeks as quickly as possible. We've had a couple of subject matter experts volunteer to help us review the draft RFP that we've invited for that, and so we're looking forward to those. Have been great comments and input, and we'll likely release the RFP later this summer as soon as we've got CMS approval and we're cleared to go. We've gone through many hoops to get to where we are today, and so we're really excited to get this moving. It does typically take CMS about 60 days to review and respond to things like this. So we're trying to rush to get this off to CMS so that we can get this launched as soon as possible. So after the RFP closes and we go through a selection process review any proposals, we'll and negotiate contracts.
You are the only participant in this conference. Press any key to continue this conference. The conference will now continue.
Huh, that was very strange. So I don't know if other folks heard that, but we had a little announcement. They were the only participant on this conference. But so last couple things. So CMS must approve our contracts before we can execute them, and then we'll launch the program as soon as we can. Okay, let's see. Hopefully we are – audio's back? Okay, excellent. And then the last question that just came in was, will the CCOs be notified about this? Yes, absolutely. Great. So, I guess it was our little phone here that that talked to us, and you guys didn't hear that, so that's great. So I just wanted to mention that the CCOs, we are engaging the CCOs. We've invited CCO participation in this today. We have a CCO Health IT Advisory Group that has participated in many sessions with us in terms of giving us input, and we're using CCO volunteers in reviewing the draft RFP from a couple of CCOs as well. Next steps are, please send us your input, questions, comments by the end of this week to Kristen Bork, and we'll finish up the RFP and get it off to CMS, and appreciate all of your participation. All right, thanks so much. We'll go ahead and end the webinar now, and appreciate your participation. Thanks.